Our next topic is Oregon's Gateway to Global Markets, a Vision for the Future. Our next speaker has been Executive Director of the Port of Portland since October 2001. The Port of Portland operates four marine terminals, two general aviation airports, and Portland International Airport. The port has over 700 employees and annual operating revenues of approximately $260 million. The value of the foreign trade moving through the port is $12 billion annually. Please help me welcome Mr. Bill Wyatt.
Thank you very much. I sat through a couple of the earlier presentations and I thought you were going to make me talk about mycopathogenic nematodes, but apparently not. So it's really great to be here. And I thought what you'll see scrolling here are just some visuals that characterize the port. And let me just start by describing the port, because most people have heard the name but really don't have an appreciation for what it is. The Port of Portland is, in effect, a municipal subdivision of the state of Oregon. So if we were in China, it'd probably be called a state-owned enterprise. We generate almost all of our revenue through business transactions of one sort or another. Terminal rents, throughput charges, rents of a variety of different types. So 96% of our revenue of the $260 million mentioned there comes through business transactions. We're actually in three basic lines of business. One, most people would imagine when you hear the phrase Port of Portland, and that is the four marine terminals that we own. We don't operate any of them, but we own them and lease them to others who do. The industrial land business, and you're seeing pictures here of some of our industrial land parcels. Industrial land in the Portland metropolitan area is very, very difficult to find, and it's very expensive. And more often than not, it's also brownfield or has some other development constraints. So we do what we can to make industrial land available in a metropolitan area. And then finally, we own and operate three airports: Portland International, which everybody knows, Troutdale Airport, and the Hillsborough Airport, which, believe it or not, is actually Portland's second, or rather Oregon's second busiest airport in terms of activity. And I'll talk a little more about all of those things today. We have a 9-member commission. They're appointed by the governor, approved by the Senate. They serve for terms of 4 years on good behavior. They'll get an additional 4-year term, but after two, they're done. They tend to be business people. Many ports have elected commissions. Talking to my colleagues who work for ports with elected commissions, they all say, wow, rather have an appointed commission, because the elected commissions do tend to seesaw back and forth, and policies change with great frequency. So let me talk a little bit. I'll start with aviation, just to give you a sense. Business is booming, and it's booming largely because the economy, particularly in the metro area, is booming as well. That's why people fly. When the economy is good, people get on an airplane either for business or for personal reasons. It was mentioned that I started in 2001. At that time, we had 11 million annual passengers. This year, we'll be at about 18.5 million annual passengers and continuing to grow. When I began in 2001, we were Portland International Airport by virtue of one daily international departure from Portland to Vancouver, British Columbia. This year, there are days of the week in which we have 11 departures to international locations, multiples in Mexico. Icelandair serves Europe through Reykjavik, Delta through and with their partner KLM to Amsterdam, Condor Airlines in the summer months to Frankfurt, and beginning in May, Delta is going to fly nonstop to London, which is a particularly important market to us. I just returned actually yesterday from Amsterdam meeting with our European airline partners. And our business has been actually very strong. Delta also flies to Narita Airport in Tokyo, where they then connect to 17 or 18 different destinations in Asia. That flight is also doing very, very well. One really great piece of news, and I suspect this probably affects a few of you in the audience today. Recently, Cathay Pacific Airlines, operating out of Hong Kong, just began 747 freighter service between Portland and Hong Kong. This is a type of service that we've had on and off over the years, but it is particularly important, particularly for people who have fresh products like blueberries is a very good example. A lot of blueberries ship out frozen seafood, and in some cases fresh seafood as well. You'd be probably curious to know what their number one export is. The air soles that are placed in the bottom of Nike tennis shoes all fly out of PDX, about 50,000 pounds a week. So if you own a pair of Nikes and you've got an air sole in the bottom, it was actually made in Hillsborough, trucked over to the airport, packaged up, sent to Hong Kong, and then sent to a variety of factories throughout Asia. But it's a very good example of the kind of thing that we try to do at the port, and that is to find people like Nike in this case and aggregate their demand in a way that creates a service that other people can use. Cathay Pacific wasn't going to come to Portland just to pick up blueberries, but since they're here, they will, and it's a tremendous advantage. It saves on trucking, and most importantly, it saves on time. I expect that the service now 2 days a week, it's Thursdays and Saturdays, or Tuesdays and Saturdays. I'm pretty sure soon it'll go to 3 days. Their ambition is to have this be a 4 day a week service. For the fourth year in a row, our airport, PDX, was voted the best U.S. airport in Travel and Leisure Magazine's World's Best Awards Reader Poll. J.D. Powers, the same thing. And if you're really interested, the Transportation Security Administration also has an annual award, which they've given us for the most secure airport in the United States. That's an award that always makes me a little nervous because anything can happen, as we've seen. But we do have just an excellent team and a very good relationship with the Transportation Security Administration. I mentioned Hillsborough Airport. In Hillsborough, it's a very busy airport. Intel, located very close by, operates basically their own airline up and down the West Coast to their facilities. Engineers wake up in Hillsborough, they get over to the airport, and they go to work in Chandler, Arizona, as an example, or vice versa. They fly 180,000 of their employees up and down the West Coast every year on regional jets. So it's a very important operation. A lot of business jet activity out there and a lot of flight training. All of this growth in global aviation means we have a pilot shortage in the world. And it's very interesting. One of our pilot schools at Hillsborough has a contract with the Chinese Aviation Administration to train young pilots for the Chinese carriers. They come over here and they want to do two things. They have to learn English, because to be a pilot on a commercial airplane anywhere in the world, you have to speak English. And number two, they get behind a Cessna 172, learn how to fly it, get a license, go home, and sit in the right-hand seat of a 737. So if you're ever in China, you're boarding one of their planes, take a little look up to the left when you get on the plane and just see how old the pilot is. I do that all the time, and just hoping they had a good time in school while they were here. In the land business, the Port of Portland got into the land business the old-fashioned way with a 30-inch pipeline dredge. That really is the reason the port was created back in 1891, to dredge the navigation channel first in the Willamette and then ultimately in the Columbia River. We continue to provide that service. We do it on a contract with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. All of that material from the navigation channel went to create Swan Island, if you know where the shipyard is in Portland. It used to actually be an island. It's now, I guess, Swan Peninsula. The Rivergate Industrial District, which is where our marine terminals are, and later developed into industrial land. The Rivergate Industrial District is the largest industrial district in the state of Oregon. That land is all spoken for. It's either been sold or leased or developed in one way or another. And so we decided to go out next to the Troutdale Airport, where Alcoa had purchased the old Reynolds aluminum mill built there to support the war effort. Reynolds and Alcoa closed the mill. It was a Superfund site. They were going to put a fence around it and leave. And we told them if they would clean it up, we would put it back into use and have it redeveloped. And they, to their everlasting credit, did so. And now it is the home of FedEx Ground, their Northwest regional facility. They employ about 2,000 people there, more than ever worked at the aluminum plant. We have another big deal in the works, but this is, you know, roughly 400 acres all told of industrial land that would never have come to pass. It represents about a third of the landmass of the city of Troutdale, so it makes an enormous contribution to their tax base as well. We've done something similar in Gresham, I'll be talking about Terminal 6 in a moment, but this is a really interesting development. One of our largest tenants is Subaru. They're importing all of the parts which they import into the United States for their maintenance purposes comes to this facility in Gresham. And the value of that is these are then empty containers that want to find their way back to Japan. This is the kind of work that we do at the port to try and make these batches work, but they're doing very, very well. So I am going to talk a little bit about the marine business, and I'll leave Terminal 6 to the last part here because I think it's worth reflecting on. We're a big auto import and export center. We import Toyotas and Hondas and Hyundais, but we also export Fords. Fords made in Michigan, railed out to Terminal 6, the other end of Terminal 6. They get on a vessel and they go to Korea and they go to China. And these aren't Ford Fiestas, they're the big ones, Ford Navigators, sort of the high-end vehicles that the Chinese want to buy. Why do they want to buy them? It costs a lot of money. If you're a Chinese citizen, you're going to spend north of $100,000 typically to buy a car, just in terms of taxes and import duties. And what they want is a car that will work if they're going to spend that much money. And so the foreign brands have been doing exceptionally well in China, the Europeans and now the Americans. Ford will do 50,000 exports through the Port of Portland this year, next year probably even more. We're very excited about that. We export soda ash, which is used in the manufacture of glass. In fact, probably most of those automobiles coming in or even out through the Port of Portland have windshields that are comprised of soda ash, which we export. It comes up from in unit trains from Wyoming. We export potash, which is a fertilizing agent. So the major U.S. and Canadian potash companies are allowed by the U.S. and Canadian government to work together on exports. They're a consortium and the largest producer and exporter of potash. Same thing, all of this comes from Saskatoon, comes down by train into their terminal facility, the largest wood structure this side of the Mississippi River, and it is exported by vessel to points all over the world. Now, grain was really kind of what founded the port facilities 125 years ago, the movement of grain. Columbia Grain, now Columbia Export Terminal, part of a changing dynamic on the river, exports about 15% of the entire U.S. wheat export, and that continues to be the case, but they also now are exporting things like soybeans, which really were not a cargo on the Columbia River 10 years ago, a relatively new cargo here, and some corn. Since the Columbia River channel was deepened by 3 feet, just 3 feet, if you can imagine this, the export facilities on the Columbia River have seen investments of pretty close to $500 million as a result of the improvement in transportation costs associated with that 3 foot deepening. So these are vessels that are 700 to 800 feet long. They carry 55,000 tons of cargo, and they sail out the Columbia River with about a foot under their keel, owing to the terrific river pilots which navigate that course. There are about 1,500 of these vessels calling the Columbia River every year, and that additional 3 feet made a tremendous difference to producers because it means that their transportation costs are a little bit less. I mentioned the Dredge Oregon. The Dredge Oregon goes out every single year at the direction of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to basically knock off the high spots in the channel so that there's a guaranteed 43 feet of water, very, very important. They just finished for the year. They're typically out there for somewhere between 6 and 7 months. And this year they dredged 1,752,000 cubic yards of material. That's kind of a light year. Usually it's about 2 million cubic yards of material. 30-inch pipeline dredge, which can pump the material up to 2 miles. So it's a pretty extraordinary operation. So let me talk briefly about Terminal 6, and then I want to close with a pitch for you on transportation, and then I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have. First, Shelley made just a terrific presentation here, and I think gave a really good state of affairs about what's happening at Terminal 6, but also in the broader industry, and I'm going to talk about both of those things. About 5 years ago now, the Port of Portland contracted with a private terminal operator to operate Terminal 6. And you saw a terrific chart up here about productivity. The carriers and the terminal operators, what they really want to know is how productive is the terminal. Because if you're a terminal operator, you make your money by the box. There's a charge. Each box has a certain charge that goes by it, but you incur expenses by the hour. So the more boxes that move in an hour, the more productive you are, the more likely it is you're going to make a buck. On the other hand, if things slow down to a considerable extent, and you saw those charts directly, you're just going to get killed. And it's not surprising that the longshoremen understand this dynamic very well. And have historically used it up and down the West Coast to great effect. And that really is what transpired at Terminal 6. These slowdowns were killing not only the terminal operator, who's kind of stuck there, but also the carriers whose ships float and who are not stuck there. And I can say this with great certainty, if there were a simple solution to this, it would have occurred to us a long time ago. The real underlying issue here is that the longshoremen are trying desperately to hang on to their jurisdiction, to the work they have, and to take jurisdiction from everybody else on the waterfront. And that's really where this fight began. It currently sits in the D.C. District of Columbia Federal Court of Appeals. The longshoremen have appealed 2 cases from the National Labor Relations Board, which they lost resoundingly. We are confident that the D.C. Court of Appeals is going to find in favor of the employer in this case. And I would also say, apropos of the earlier feedback here about the new administration, my guess is they weren't thinking that that was a possibility. And things like the National Labor Relations Board, they're going to look a little different here in a few months. And the attitude, not just generally about organized labor, but about people undertaking activities of this sort, is going to change significantly. We haven't seen any evidence of that yet, but they haven't come into office. And I suspect that things are, this is a wild card, if you will, that I think is going to make a very, very big difference. In the meantime, we have worked with a lot of the stakeholders in this business, in the ag transportation business, but in the freight business generally, to look at a variety of alternatives, because I think the other part of Shelley's message, and it's an important part, the global container shipping industry is in deep, deep trouble. Hanjin, one of the oldest carriers, our oldest customer at the Port of Portland, the third largest carrier in the Trans-Pacific between Asia and the United States, is being liquidated. A third or two-thirds of their ships were actually leased. The lessors have come in and taken them back. The remaining third are being sold, some for scrap, and some by other companies who want to put them in service again. That's just one. American President Lines, which is sadly no longer American, was bought many years ago by the Singaporean National Wealth Fund. They've been sold to CMA CGM, which is a French company. OOCL, one of the largest carriers in the world, Hong Kong-based, they're for sale. Hyundai Merchant Marine, the other Korean carrier, is in very, very dire straits. And anybody in the industry would have said a year ago, they're the ones who are going to go under. And Hamburg Süd, one of the big German carriers, was just purchased by Maersk. Hapag-Lloyd, one of the other big German carriers, is for sale, and difficult to know where that'll end up. The point of all this is that we've had way too many ocean carriers, and they have done what happens in a world with unlimited supply and limited demand. They pretty well have killed themselves. There isn't a single one of them generating a net profit today. So the industry is going to change. New alliances are forming among these carriers, sort of like the airlines, the SkyTeam and the Star Alliance. The same thing is happening on the carrier front. And it's probably a year before all of that sorts out. The other thing that's happened, and this is important for a place like Portland, when I began at the port, the largest container ship calling our port was capable of handling 4,000 TEUs. TEU, 20-foot equivalent unit, a box, a metal box, 20 feet long, 8 feet high, 8 feet wide, 4,000. And believe me, that was huge. I can remember my first day going down to the terminal and seeing this ship, and it's just immense, and the cranes, the four cranes that were operating on it. Well, now the average in the West Coast is 7,500 TEUs on its way to 8 to 9,000. In the Columbia River, and it's not just a matter of depth, there are a number of factors that go into this, probably the largest container vessel that we can handle is in the neighborhood of 6,500 TEUs. So in addition to all of the other challenges, we have to find the right carrier who's got the right deployment of vessels. There is, having said all of that, a pretty good business in Portland. We have reasonable cargo available at a reasonable price. Exports over time, I think, are going to be in a more important mix of container cargo. For the last 15 years, containerization has been driven almost entirely by imports, largely from China, and that's beginning to change. The strong dollar right now is a killer. I'll just be blunt about that. I was in Europe yesterday. The euro is at 94 cents, which is really amazing. I'd kind of adapted myself to the 70 cent euro. The pound is at $1.27. Now, the pound used to just kind of average out at about $1.65. So it's great if you're traveling, as I was, and everything looks like it's a dollar now. But it's not so great if you're exporting. And I think that the strong dollar is likely to continue for a while. That's just my take. But I think the new administration is doing things to stimulate activity. Interest rates will go up a little bit. Dollar-based investments are going to become a little more attractive. So I would just say and you're getting exactly what you pay for here. My sense is the dollar is going to be strong for a period of time because of that. By the same token, I do think that the new administration, despite all of the hype and the conversation, I think they're going to put a lot of energy into trade-related issues. If you listen to the rhetoric, okay, that's one thing. But then if you look at some of the folks who are actually going to be involved and engaged, these are thoughtful global players. Tillerson from Exxon Mobil, he's worked all over the world. And so I have some optimism on that front. I'm disappointed about the TPP, but I don't think that's going to be the last chapter in that story. And so I would say pay attention to that. Now, finally, one pitch I want to make, because this is something we can affect right here in Oregon, and that has to do with transportation. Just about all of the major players coming into this next session of the legislature have talked about the importance of transportation and investment in transportation. The new administration is talking about investment in transportation. It's been a long time since we've spent new money on transportation infrastructure here in this state, and all of our neighbors are doing it. Washington to a very great extent, California to a significant extent, Idaho will spend more new dollars on transportation infrastructure next year than we will. Now, this is a state that is about 20% our size, and yet, and conservative, Republican, anti-tax, they're gonna dig deep and spend a lot of money on transportation infrastructure, and we currently are out. We have no real additional resources to do that. I think a lot of the business interests are coming together now to talk about a plan to do that. The new administration seems very focused on infrastructure, which I think is terrific. But I live in the metro area, and I can tell you every day when I get up to go to work, our office is out at the airport, I get my little map program out on my iPhone and figure out where the traffic is before I make a right turn or a left turn or head through the center of town to get there. When I leave at night from my office, I'm very lucky. I can see the I-205 bridge. I get a pair of binoculars out and I look at the bridge, and that tells me how I'm going home that night. And the used to be the 205 was a kind of a safe haven way around the congestion of Portland, and now it's every bit as congested as Portland. So I would just say through your various trade organizations and relationships with members of the legislature and other, I really urge you to put transportation at the top of the list of things that are dealt with this session. It is extremely important to us. I do feel there's a little momentum despite challenges elsewhere. Let's take advantage of the energy that I think we're going to be seeing from the nation's capital to leverage that right here in Oregon. Now, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have, but let me just say thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure to be with you today.